हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 74. Okay, Sutra 2.1.23. The Sutra card indicates that the next two sutras prove the jiva's lack of independence. Asmad... We did that, okay. Asmadi vat chatad anu patihi. Asmadivat, like stone, etc. Cha, and, tat, of that. Anupapattihi, impossibility. Probably the quickest you've ever done a page. The jiva is unsuitable as the creator of the universe, since he is dependent, like stone. Sutra Prakashika. The Lord is the supremely independent controller of the dependent jiva. Govinda Bhashya. Siddhanta. The jiva fails as an independent creator, because even though the jiva is conscious, he is not independent. He is like a stone, piece of wood, or lump of clay. Anta pravishtaha shashta jananam. The Lord is within all jivas and controls them all. Taitriya Aranyaka. 3.11.10 Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam. The Lord controls all beings. Bhagavad Gita 18.61
The idea of a stone means inanimate or whatever?
It means that the qualities that all these have, the stone, the wood, the lump of clay, they can't function on their own. Right, it means that they're going to do something. The nature of them, a stone, is coming from Krishna. And if you do anything, a stone does something, it's by someone else's efforts. Right. So in the same way, the jiva, they're not independent. Though they're conscious, they're not independent. So whatever's going on is actually going on because Krishna in the heart, and then through his material energies, then they all are going on. Oh, that's interesting. Little.
It means
the next page.
Yeah, the next page.
Dynamic
reading within a reading.
Sorry?
It's a dynamic reading within a reading that the fine art student sees.
Okay, yeah. The old ones we used to have is that the hand, you know, it's either pointing like this, you know, just this much, or pointing like that.
And that is static, therefore, this is dynamic reading.
Huh?
That is static when you show a hand like that. But when
How is this dynamic?
This is dynamic because it's going within a reading. Reading within a reading is...
Reading with... What does that mean, reading within a reading?
Well, when you read the Bhagavatam verse, okay, that's the main content. When you get a footnote, in that we read this. So it's interlude.
But it just means it goes to the next page.
Yeah, but that's how it indicates, so I use the same thing.
Oh, okay. Does that make sense? So, in other words, we're able to do things because the Lord is the controller. Like that. Without Him, we can't do things. We can't create. We can't. We're only functioning as instruments within what He's already accomplishing. Right? It's His potencies that get anything done.
We're like a stone.
Means that concept. Means the stone is not conscious. We're conscious. But the point is getting things done is still just as at We can do as much as a stone can do. The difference is the stone's not conscious when it's used in something, while we are. So good to know, right? Yeah. Inspire.
Just for the record.
Yes, Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.30. If the countless living entities were all pervading and possessed forms that never changed, you could not possibly be their absolute ruler, O immutable one. But since they are your localized expansions and their forms are subject to change, you do control them. Indeed, that which supplies the ingredients for the generation of something is necessarily its controller, because the product never exists apart from its ingredient cause. That means a product, let's say, like, you know, like the example of the pot, it doesn't exist separately from the clay. Right? It's not that when you make the pot out of clay, it transforms into some other element. No, the shape changes, but it's still clay. So in the same way, the person who provides the ingredients is the one who's controlling. Does that make sense? Yeah. So Krishna provides the elements, the 24 elements, therefore he's the one controlling it. We don't supply. That's why it's very important to understand is that maintenance, only Vishnu can be the maintainer, because he provides the ingredients of the creation. Brahma and Shiva don't. Indra doesn't. Right? No one else supplies, so they can't be the maintainer. Right? Because the things that make the maintenance work, someone has to be bringing in. Right? So the 24 elements and how they function, that is being done by Krishna, so that means others can't claim to be the maintainer. They can do their part, the creation, the destruction, the management, like that. But they can't be the maintainer. Does that make sense? Because they're not supplying. Does that make sense? Yeah, because just because they do the work doesn't make them the maintainer. Right? Means, let's say, the man is maintaining his house, so he has the money. Right? And because of that, then laborers will come, they will do different work, you know, fix the roof or do the plumbing or do electricity. But they're not called the maintainer, even though they physically did the work. Who's the maintainer? The one that provides the ingredients. Right? Because you can say, no, but the plumber went out and got all the things and that, but how did he get them? Because of money. You're providing the money, you're maintaining the house. Understand? So Krishna's providing the ingredients. Therefore, Brahma and Shiva, Brahma's creating with those and Shiva's destroying with those. Okay? Does that make sense? So they're all based on what Krishna is. So the Jiva, since they don't produce anything, then they're not the ones that are the controller. Krishna's control. Right? Yeah. So, only if they're all pervading, possess forms that never change, then you couldn't be their ruler. Right? But they do. They have temporary forms, everything's changing, they're not all pervading, they're localized. That's why the term is used, localized. Right? Means they're there, and that's all the more they're there. You want to be somewhere else, you have to move. You know? All pervading your 1/10,000th the tip of a hair space. Yes. Okay. It is simply illusion for someone to think that he knows the Supreme Lord, who is equally present in each of his expansions, since whatever knowledge one gains by material means must be imperfect. Right. So material knowledge, and that's always going to be imperfect, right? Because it's based on the senses, which only can have limited ability. And that ability is given by Krishna. Right? As we discussed before, in consciousness, we're conscious. But how are we conscious? Right? We're conscious through the senses. How do the senses work? Krishna's seeing, we connect into that. Right? So we're not separately, we're not producing this function of the senses. Krishna is. and then sense that he is the senses and the sense objects in the process of the tanmatras, right? Then that means how much we are whatever we're qualified for in seeing, that's how much Krishna reveals. Right? So on the material platform, by our karma, whatever's our karma, let's say, to see, then that is how much you have the consciousness to see. Right? You're conscious, but what your consciousness can do, that's still good. That's the pramana chaitanya. So you can only see how much Krishna reveals. Because one, let's say you take 10 people and sit them down here in this one place. What they will, and then afterwards you sit them here for 5 minutes, and afterwards you take them somewhere else, and one by one you interview them. And some things will be common, but there's a good chance that what they see is totally different. Right? Because there's so many elements that are here, what they're seeing and all this. So because of that, they all see something different. Why? Because that's the consciousness that they're allowed to perceive through. You know, you bring a dog in here, they'll see something else. They'll say, there's nothing here. You ask a dog, so you were in that place, what's there? Said, nothing. What does nothing mean? Nothing to eat. Right? You bring an ant in, you can't tell that there's a building here and this and all that kind of stuff. Right, so that's revealed. So even though they're conscious, that consciousness, how much you can see, is still controlled by the Lord. Right, and so therefore, if you're dealing with the senses, how can you know the unlimited absolute truth through limited senses that are only functioning according to your karma? Right, and then if you're going to see beyond, which is spiritual, how will material senses see what's spiritual? Right, something has to function within its own category. Does that make sense? Like I use the liquid measure for measuring liquid. I use the thermometer for temperature. I use the barometer for air pressure. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't use them, or you can't mix and match. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that material senses can only perceive material. They can't perceive spiritual. People due to false ego thinks, I'm smart, I can see anything, know anything, I'm like this. But it's not scientific. It's just sentiment. They'll always say, oh, but if you can't show me, but it says you can't see. It's not a matter of not showing. We can show if you have spiritual senses. Does that make sense? Yes.
Nowadays, Maharaj, there's a popular idea is that our perception is based on the purva samskaras, our previous impressions.
Right.
So then some devotees, they preach and they say that we have to increase the positive impressions in the practice of pure devotional service, and then it will develop nicely. The person will be very, you know, devotee will be very dynamic. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. It will be...
But what do they mean by dynamic?
Means not as many obstacles as could be. Or if you don't have those impressions, then you go, you know, step by step, but you got stuck for years, and then you go again, and then come back, and like that.
Okay. Now, are they making a distinction between material samskaras and spiritual?
Yeah.
So then, what's the meaning of the purva samskaras? If it's the spiritual samskaras that are going to make you dynamic. Because if I do something in devotional service, that's going to produce a spiritual samskara. What does that have to do with our purva samskara? You know what I'm saying? It's two different things.
Yeah.
So why are they connecting them?
Because of the piety aspect.
And... I mean, just being scientific here, you would have to be pious to have pious samskaras. You know what I'm saying?
No.
To have a pious samskar means I have to be performing pious activities.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you're not following the Vedas or following the four regular principles, where are the pious samskars? Right?
Yeah.
So therefore, we can't claim to move forward in devotional service by mundane pious samskars. It has to be spiritual samskars, which are naturally pious.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the piety of the samskar that makes it dynamic, it's its connection to Krishna. Because realizing Krishna and being able to see Krishna and assist others in appreciating Krishna, that only comes from Krishna. It doesn't come, it's not the mechanics of the samskar that make it happen. You know what I'm saying? Because it's what Krishna reveals. It's just like Dhruva Maharaj. Does he have a samskar of seeing God?
Not before he had a bath.
No. So then, but how did he have that then? Because Krishna reveals.
Yeah.
And how did he even know where to go? He had an idea, okay, I'm going to go look for God. Where does this first understanding come from? Right? Who's his Vartma Pradarsha Guru? His mother. So she just knows the sages go to the forest to look for God, so there must be either that's the method or that's where he's found. So then he goes to the forest. And then having gone to the forest, then that catches the interest of Narad Muni, who then actually teaches him the process. And then by following the process of the Acharya, now Krishna being pleased, he reveals himself. So it's only by devotion. So the idea is that your Purva Samskar simply means what facilities you work with. Does that make sense? So just let's say, for example, someone was trained in accountancy. So therefore he likes numbers, he likes money, he knows how to deal and, you know, like that. He knows to account for it. So then you could engage him in something that is responsible, you know, on accounting for money. But the point is it's the devotion to Krishna that makes it work. It's not that the accounting itself is special. It's that he uses that as the medium. So there's no need to connect these two and get, you know, overly mental about it. You know what I'm saying? The point is that, yes, you need to improve and purify the samskars. But that means is that you're doing devotional activity, so automatically that'll be taken care of. So it doesn't matter what the previous ones are if you're focused on Krishna consciousness. Now, due to attachment to the old ones, that may be an obstacle to performing the devotional activities. But it's not that devotional activities are dependent upon those previous samskars being good or bad. Because otherwise, if it is, that means then bhakti is not independent. It's dependent upon karma. You know, or jnana, depending upon which background, which is their identifying principle, whether I was, you know, super intelligent and independent thinking, or I was a, you know, practical god. You know what I'm saying? So there's no need to connect these two. You just know that I do devotional service. So the point is whatever you do, the activity generates a seed. So if I do material activity, it generates a seed to want to do more activity, material. If I do spiritual activity, it generates a seed to do more spiritual. So the point is you just have to focus on the spiritual. And the aspect of the Purva Samskar is only advantageous to kind of know a general idea of where you work. But you have to be able to discriminate on what aspect of that work you do. Because there's a principle to that Purva Samskar. That you can bring through into Krishna consciousness. But the secondary may or may not, depending upon whether the secondary is pious or not. Does that make sense? You know, just like we gave that example. One devotee, he was a butcher before he joined. So what in there, what's the essential point? They use a knife. They're expert at using knife. So therefore he can bring through the use of the knife into Krishna consciousness. And therefore he was the quickest and best barber I've ever seen. I mean, literally. You know? Like that. Because that part he brought through. But everything else you have to drop. You understand? Well, let's say something like accountancy, you could bring that through, and basically how you learned accounts, you can do that for the temple. Right? Because the point is, but you have to know again, what is the essence? The essence is not dealing with money. The essence is accounting for money. You know what I'm saying? Because many who are trained in accountancy, when they come into Krishna consciousness and want to take up responsibility, they think they know how to spend money. When they have, unless they learn from their parents or something, they have zero training in how to spend money. What is valuable, how to spend, how to understand what to be used or not. They know how to account for money that's already been spent. And what's the proper way to document. But as far as spending money, they have zero idea. And controlling the money, they don't. That's a treasurer. Right? The guy who gives out the money, that's a cashier. The guy who accounts for it, that's the accountant. So you have to know what you know. So you know only this much, how to document things. That you could do. So you have to know from that, that's the only values, because then you know what areas you can do naturally for Krishna very nicely. But the devotion, that's separate. That's independent. So there's no need to get too absorbed in this. Right? In other words, everything has its value. Like, let's say salt is very important, but we don't make everything about salt. There's other spices. There's the balance, how much salt you put and what things you put salt. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like salt makes the vegetables better, but it doesn't make the milk better. You know? Like that. So you have to know where to apply it. So that's then why we use the Shastra, why we use the Acharyas. And that's why then devotional service being done according to authority is always pious. Because it's doing the correct thing. Right? And our background then, if it matches that, then we can basically use it as it is. But if not, then we can just take whatever is useful from that. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, so many years of playing a brass instrument. And so now the thing that comes across that you can do in Krishna consciousness is play a conch shell. So you have no problem playing a conch shell. But everything else you're not going to do. You understand? So, because it's the same technique, so that technique that actually makes it work, that you can use in Krishna consciousness, but there's no keys on the conch shell. You know, so, you know, it has its limit on what you can do with it. That makes sense? You could also play a chauffeur. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you have to be, you know, realistic on what is useful and what's not. You know, otherwise it just gets too intellectual, too mental, you know, too detached from the actual practical reality. Is that okay?
Maharaj, and can you say that Krishna reveals accordingly, you know, whether the transcendentalist or the materialist.
Right. So
then the scientist, you know, to whom he reveals, they are able to see much of materialism that is much discovery. So can we say that they are the most pious people?
Can we say they're the most pious people, scientists, because they come up with discoveries? But are they the only ones that are coming up with discoveries?
Yes.
That's it. So like Da Vinci or what do you call this? All his Bernini, Gach, you know, all these guys or Go, whatever. You know, Bach or, you know, all these guys, they're not discovering anything, or all those French guys at cafes drinking coffee, coming up with philosophies, or, you know.
Tangible discovery, which can be utilized.
Tangible, okay. Let us say the scientist comes up with something, but it's when it actually hits the street and is marketed, That's when it's actually useful. So why are they picked out as, you know, the most ones? What about the guys that come up with, you know, Mark Twain or any of these guys that come up with books that have been more known and more well-known than anything that these scientists have come up with? Right? When it comes to science, basically everybody knows Einstein.
And Newton.
Hmm? And Newton. And maybe the guy in the wheelchair who's now dead. You know what I'm saying? And of science, the general people might probably be able to say E equals MC squared. They wouldn't have an idea what it is like this. Okay? Now, all the other scientists, does anybody ever know them who have ever heard of them? Anybody know who won the Nobel Prize, you know, for science this year?
Marie Curie.
Okay. You know. Okay, but what was the most, means of the of haute couture, what was the main house that actually came out with the most dynamic things this year in Paris that went down the catwalk? So then why is it that the area that you know, that is the most pious people?
Because scientists are respected all over the world.
Yeah. And so is, you know, Ermengeldo Zegna, you know, and, you know, Louis Vuitton and Christian Louboutin. All these guys, they're also highly respected by millions of people. You know, Trump is respected by millions of people. So if we're just going by respect... like that. And I'm sure if you go back in time that there's so many, you know, how you say, the pinup girls, they were highly respected. Like every, you know, how you say, military man deployed overseas, they all knew that. You know, or we take, you know, someone like, you know, Brad Pitt. Does everybody know him? They probably, more people know Brad Pitt than they know any scientist. I mean, literally. And his wife. They probably know more about them. So, means, okay, Einstein. Okay, Jewish guy, frizzy hair, German, wore house slippers, had five suits that were all exactly the same so that you can mix and match. Right? law of relativity. That's about it, right? Yeah, that's like a full range. But probably people could go on talking for a lot longer. That was what? We got through, what, maybe 15 seconds there? They could probably go on for at least half an hour about any of these other celebrities. So that's why we don't take that so much. They're pious in that they have intelligence. Because that's one aspect. You're taking that knowledge of the six opulences is the main one. What about renunciation? Diogenes, and he was more renounced than all of them put together. You know, like that. When it comes to beauty, then so many. Most scientists aren't very good looking. Just, I'm sorry to say, but it's just a well-known, well-established fact. You know, you don't have any, you know, super good-looking scientists. A few here and there, but they're extremely rare. I met one person that they were a beauty pageant winner, and they were a PhD in physics. I've met one. Yeah, that's it. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's beauty. Then there's so many we could say as beauty. Right? So then fame. We could say so many are known as fame. You know, who have wealth. And all that is known. You know what I'm saying? You understand? So, there are all these different branches of six kinds of opulences. And their varieties. Right? So then, any of them, if you have any, that's piety. So you can say they have piety. But in other areas, are they pious? No, because they're on the platform of anamoi, because unless they see it with their senses, they don't believe it exists. So is that a very elevated, you know, in knowledge? They have knowledge in one aspect, but in another, knowing that there's levels of consciousness like Pranamoy. Pranamoy completely eludes these scientists. The guys that win these prizes like that, they can't even tell that there's other living entities around them, practically. They're so absorbed in what they do. They walk down the street, they bump into things, they don't wear their clothes, they don't do anything. They put them in a social environment, they wouldn't know what to do. So Pranamoy, they absolutely have no connection with. I mean, zero. You know what I'm saying? So, you could say of living entities on the platform of Anamoy, they are the most developed. That you could say with certainty. But that's in their area. But you take, let's say, some guy, he's the world expert on cognac. You know, these nose guys, you know, there in France. Can't remember what's that place. Is that one village way out in the province?
Grasse.
Huh?
Grasse.
Grasse. All fragrances come from there. And they have a nose. Some of those guys have their nose insured for millions and millions of dollars. Because they can smell. That's why the fragrance is so good, because those guys are smelling. And they even call them the nose, right? You know, probably in French, that's the term, the nose. But when it comes to other things, they may be also just the same, you know, as, you know, the scientists. But being French, they'll be a little bit better at the social things. You know what I'm saying? So you always have to take is why limit like that? Does that make sense? Point is we have the levels of consciousness. So Brahma is the most pious living entity in the universe. And he can do a bit more than just physics. Okay? Yeah.
Which point Krishna reveals in the jivas
reveals what?
The spiritual.
When you approach him through the bona fide spiritual master. Right? It means from the material facilities that you have, Krishna allows that one can appreciate that the Supreme exists and they're unlimited and, and without material qualities. That much you can understand from the material. But to go beyond that, that has to be revealed through the Parampara. Otherwise it won't come. Good?
Prabhupada explained the point that you made, that they are completely unfunctioning in the social atmosphere. Prabhupada explained about Louis Pasteur, forgot to attend his own wedding ceremony.
Yeah.
So busy in the lab making experiments and doing all kinds of
forgotten. Yeah, then someone comes to that. Okay. Yeah.
And what is scientific? What is innovation? It's a person called Lou Bouton.
Yeah.
He just took a regular woman's heel shoes, you know, the high heel one,
right.
And painted the bottom red and patented this act of his.
Do you know what he painted the bottom red with? He wanted to do something, he was putting it together, and one of the women who was working there for him, she was painting her nails.
I see.
So he used the red nail polish to paint the bottom of the shoe.
That's an innovation.
Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that it's just all these things are there. Someone comes up with everything, a little bit here and there. So the point is to have any of these six opulences means piety. But you can't say that any one of them is there, because the one that starts them all, they all come from beauty. Because if you have beauty, you get all the others. But if you just have knowledge, it doesn't necessarily mean you get beauty. You understand? Okay. We finished the verse?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Footnote 35. The BVT purport confronts the various schools of philosophies and thereby declares the Supreme Lord's sovereignty and supremacy over the jiva. Because the conditioned soul cannot directly understand the Supreme, the Vedas commonly refer to that Supreme Truth in such impersonal terms as Brahman and Om Tat Sat. If an ordinary scholar presumes to know the confidential meaning of these symbolic references, he should be rejected as an imposter. In the words of Kena Upanishad 2.1, Yadi Manyase Suvedeti Dabhram Evapi Nunam Tvam Veta Brahmano Rupam Yad Asya Tvam Yad Asya Deveshu. If you think you know Brahman well, then your knowledge is very meager. If you think you can identify Brahman's form from among the demigods, indeed you know but little. And again, yasyam atam tasya matam matam yasya na veda saha avigyatam vigyanatam vigyatam avijanatam. Whoever denies having any opinion of his own about the Supreme Truth is correct in his opinion, whereas one who has his own opinion about the Supreme does not know him. He is unknown to those who claim to know him, and can only be known by those who do not claim to know him. Kena Upanishad 2.3. Acharya Sridhar Swami gives the following explanation of this verse. Many philosophers have studied the mysteries of life from various perspectives and have formed widely differing theories. The Advaita Mayavadis, for example, propose that there is only one living being and one power of illusion, avidya, that covers him, producing the appearance of plurality. But this hypothesis leads to the absurd conclusion that when any one living entity becomes liberated, everyone attains liberation. If that's the case, you just have to have one guy do that, and then everybody else can enjoy themselves, right? You know, how you say, Jesus died for our sins so we can do whatever we want, and this guy is doing all the austerities, you know, and we can do whatever we want. You know, so I mean, yeah. If, on the other hand, there are many avidyas to cover the one living being, such avidya will cover only some part of him, and we would have to talk about his becoming partially liberated at particular times when his other parts remain in bondage. This is obviously absurd. Thus, the plurality of living beings is an unavoidable conclusion. Furthermore, there are other theoreticians, namely the proponents of Nyaya and Vaisheshika, who claim that the jiva soul is infinite in size. If souls were infinitesimal, these scholars argue, they would not pervade their own bodies. Whereas if they were of medium size, it would be divisible into parts, and thus could not be eternal, at least according to the axioms of Nyaya Vaisheshika metaphysics. But if the numerous eternal jiva souls are each infinitely large, how could they be covered by any power of bondage, whether belonging to avidya or to the Supreme Lord himself? According to this theory, there can be no illusion for the soul, no limitations from which to be liberated. The infinite souls must eternally remain as they are, without change. This would mean that the souls would all be equal to God, since he would have no scope for controlling these pervading, unchanging rivals. Yes, you can see is that when you use the material intelligence, you come up with all kinds of weird stuff. Right? The actual Vedanta philosophy is given by the Acharyas, very nice, straightforward, very, you know. Otherwise, you come up with, you overthink. You see what's happening in all these things, we're overemphasized, overthinking a particular area. Right? Does that make sense? Like before, the first one is that Purva Samskar, the importance of that, rather than bhakti. Or then the importance of knowledge of the six opulences as the most actual piety, rather than consciousness. Right? The first one is rather than the independence of bhakti. You understand? We overemphasize something. And that's what then creates it off. It's not in that razor's edge. It's not in the middle. So here again is that with the mundane intelligence of trying to understand the jiva. So if he's so small, how can he, you know, pervade the body? Same time, if he's bigger, then he's divisible. And then if he's, you know, really big, you know, then they're on the level with the God, and then, you know, so all these different things come up. So it's just, that's why we accept the Shastras as they are from the Acharyas. Then accepting that, surrendering to that, then Krishna reveals. It's not that, oh, I just study what the Acharyas give, that's why I know. No, it's because you're approaching and surrendering to the Acharyas. Krishna being pleased, he reveals. Krishna and his knowledge are always independent. It's not that because I studied it, that's why I know it. No. If you study nicely, Krishna then reciprocates. But if someone's just studying the facts and figures, that's all they know. They don't have the realization. They don't know the bhakti. Yes.
And from this can another problem come. Because people, they understand. They surrender. They accept the Shastra. They try to follow. And then something, they think they've been revealed. Something was revealed to them. And that's sometimes...
Well, is it in line with Scripture? Because you can't follow the whole process and have something revealed that's not there in the Scripture.
Because the revelation they take to be a revelation, sometimes it's just their own concocted ideas.
But that's why you always have to compare it to Scriptures and what's being done and what's the example. You always have to compare it back. Because just because they had that revelation, then nice. They also felt hungry for lunch. You know, so Vaishvanara is also, you know, making them hungry. So the whole point is that that they had a revelation, that's not the big deal. You know, it's that it's about Krishna, that's the big deal. So when we make it too much about ourselves, then again, we're overemphasizing my revelation.
And if we take this a little further and say that even in our society, for example, different individuals, they emphasize different things in the practice of Krishna consciousness,
yes,
which is in line.
Yes, but that's fine because there is individuality.
But wouldn't this be just overemphasizing also?
No, overemphasizing means it goes out of the context of its actual application within the spiritual context. When it takes on the material qualities due to our own attachment. If it's just a field that we're comfortable working in, that's fine.
But it's inevitably usually comes to that.
It may, but the point is spiritual is independent. It doesn't have to. So if it is, then that's the material. But it's not that there's uniqueness and individuality that's the problem. Because if we take that as the problem and try to make everything homogenous, that won't work either. You know what I'm saying? So you always have to see is that it's that's why the Acharyas, then they give. And then if you work in a particular area, then that's fine. Someone works more in deity worship, someone more in book distribution, someone more in college preaching, someone more in management, someone, that's fine. But it means in the context of management, what does Prabhupada talk about there? What we have to know is if you're working within management, management itself in detail is limited to management. The principles there are connected to Krishna, so those can be applied in other areas. But you can't apply the detail that you're using in management to other areas. Right? You know, means that you want to make everything efficiently go in deity worship, so there's management. But to think that management is the more important thing in the deity worship, no, that's cleanliness and punctuality. Right? So it has a different thing that it's using. You know? People becoming Krishna conscious, that's the whole point of the preaching. So you have to know what is connected and what's not. Krishna is pervading everything. So therefore everything is connected, but you have to understand what is connected and what has commonality. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why then we depend upon the Acharyas for that direction. So then we do something, and if it's working like that, we use. But if, you know, if we see that the time it needs some adjustment, we have to make that adjustment. So if we start from our conditioning, and then we engage that, but with time it'll be more and more just the principles of the conditioning rather than the detail of the conditioning.
Can we say that when we know something, I mean in transcendental, also that can be measured, judged by others. But
if we know something, it can be measured and judged by others.
External. But revelation is something that is internal.
Revelation is something that's internal. Yes, but whatever is internal, does it not manifest externally?
Yes.
What's internal, does it manifest externally?
Yes, it manifests
externally. So therefore they can judge from that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like how do we have all these... what is Anubhava?
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. So therefore then you can understand these things. So that's the whole point, is that from their revelation, the particular Anubhavas that are there, then you can have an appreciation of what's going on. If it matches, if it's Rasa Bhasa or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we say that we measure how the person deals by the experience?
Yes. You see, it's if their ability, their position, their relationship, how they interact, you know, what language they use, what attitudes they use, what mechanical methods and knowledge they use, from all that you can see what's appropriate.
And the Bhava always there.
Yeah, no, but here in this, in this point, you don't need to extend it too much. And here, it's just a matter of what we're saying is that whatever is inside manifests outside. It means the body we have is based on our internal mood. That's why we have this particular body. Otherwise, the body would be different. Right? So, the subtle body is always moving with the living entity as long as they're within the material world. So, whatever state the subtle body's in, that's what then generates that particular gross body. You know, like whatever gross body is there, if no one else bothers you, you're quite comfortable engaging the senses according to the nature of that body. People only think that their body, there's a problem when others say that your body's a problem. Does that make sense? The Vedic Shruti mantras, which affirm unequivocally the mastery of the Lord over the individual soul, cannot be validly contradicted. A true philosopher must accept the statements of Shruti as reliable authority on all matters they touch. Certainly, in numerous places, the Vedic literatures contrast the Supreme Lord's perpetual, unchanging oneness with the ever-changing embodiments of living beings caught up in the cycle of birth and death. Right? So many times this is mentioned, because you always see is that we were saying, like when you're talking about the Lord, the opposites are mentioned. Mm-hmm. So also when you show the connection between the Lord and the living entity, generally you always, when we're dealing with philosophy, you always see the opposites. He's the supreme controller, we're the control. He's the all-knowing, we only know, you know, sometimes we don't even know the nose and the face. Right? But he knows, he remembers, like with Arjuna, I remember all the births, you don't. You just know what's going on this birth. I remember all of them. So that contrast is there. Only in rasa, then you bring out the commonality. Because then it's for interactions. Right? But that must be based on affection. If it's not based on affection, then why God wants to hang out with you? Right? Because all the mechanics you're using anyway to interact is all Him anyway. So, and if we're only working on the external, how attractive is that external secondary interaction? Not very much. So what he's interested in is that devotional aspect. Right? The devotion. That's the part that Krishna is interested in. Then, according to the individuality of the living entities, then they use different secondary aspects to express the same primary thing of Krishna, of attraction to Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's what gives the variety. So then that oneness is brought out. What's the commonality?
Mm-hmm.
But when it's not based on affection, mm-hmm. and it's based on I'm the controller and enjoyer, then the philosophy is what is being used in place. So therefore, then we are not the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense? Srila Sridhar Swami prays, Antar yata sarva lokasya gita shrutya yuktya chaivam eva vasyeyaha yas sarva jnana sarva shaktir nishingaha shrimantam tad chetasaiva valambe. In my heart I take shelter of him who is glorified as the inner controller of all the worlds and whom the Vedas ascertain in truth through logical reasoning. He is Nrisimha, the omniscient and omnipotent Lord of the goddess of fortune. So the point is, he's controlling, he's omniscient, he's omnipotent, and he controls all the occurrences.
On the same page.
Sorry?
We're on the same page. Stop.
Ah. Yeah. Okay. Sutra 2124. Right, so this is the second one in this. What is it? That the jiva is controlled by the Lord. Right?
Greater powers of Brahman.
Means that the jiva's lack of independence.
Yeah.
Upa samhara darshanan neti chen na shira vadhi. Upasamhara, complexion, darshanat, because of the seeing, na, not, iti, thus, chait, if, shira, shiravat, like milk, he, like milk, he, because. If you argue that the jiva can create a universe because we see him perform actions, the answer is no, since the jiva is dependent in his actions, just as a cow is dependent in producing milk. Sutra Prakashika. Although the dependent jiva is the performer of action, the Lord is in fact the independent, indivisible precipitate. Srila Vyasadeva convinces of this truth later in Vedanta Sutra 2.331 and 2.339. Karta, Shastrartha, Vatvat, and Paratu touch trutehe. The jiva is the agent, since this gives meaning to the scriptures. Right? So they're doing things, but then they're not independent, right? So then there's a problem. We're saying Krishna is doing everything, he's controlling everything. Then saying that the jiva is doing things, that is a contradiction. Right? Now Krishna is doing everything, he's the controller of everything, but the jiva takes part as an agent. Now it makes sense. So that's the point of the direct meaning. Right? To come up with some other meaning, you actually have to use lakshana. You can't use abhidha. Right? Because lakshana means your poetic or your inferred meaning, or like this, the secondary meaning. Then you could come up with that. And then that starts all the mental speculation. Right? Now, if I say, okay, God's the creator, you know, controller, we're also creating and controlling, and so therefore then there may be a contradiction here. This gives rise to mental speculation. And so for the jnanis, now the fun starts. Right? So that's where their taste lies. Yes?
Can we say that the origin of mental speculation is lack of accepting authority?
It could be both. It means the ultimate authority, meaning Krishna is the ultimate authority. But it comes down to you may be pious and work within the context of the Shastra, and so speculate within that context. Or you may be impious and speculate outside of that.
But I was thinking more like a contemporary thing. Because previously you could say just Prabhupada said and then would end.
Yes, within the society, but it's a matter of speculation can happen even accepting authority. And then you speculate within that. So that's why then you have the element of religion, is the practice, what is the tradition. So then we'll find this is what you're talking about there, is that when we don't accept the authority of the Vedic religious process as given to us by Prabhupada, then rejecting that, now the speculation is not on so much on the words as Prabhupada's saying, but it's a matter of its application religiously. You know, means how are we going to apply this in our life practically? Mm-hmm. That then the speculation will start. So they're accepting the authority on one side, but not on the other. So you could say, yes, it comes down to it. But ultimately it comes down to, are we accepting the authority of Krishna? Right? And then Guru Sadhu Shastra. If that's all in place, then that speculation is less. Right? But what we also see is that just within in Gyan, then we're taking it that if there's contradiction, then we can, you know, there's no authority, then we can speculate. But people also speculate within the context of karma. What's the best way to enjoy? What's the best? So someone may be pious. And so then when they're pious, then they'll follow Shastra. And then what gain they want to get from Shastra, then they'll apply themselves. Right? But even if they don't follow, it's that, you know, what will give the most sense gratification to myself? What will I get as the best? So you see in both the Karmi and Jnani, it still comes back to their accepting. Right? Within authority, what aspects I accept. You know, so I've accepted karma. You know, so I work within that context. I've accepted Jnana. What you can do is just touch the head a little bit on the side you want to steer them from. Just there, little, that, not too much. You know, it's just, yes. It's just enough that it's that you don't hit them. You just get close enough where they go, what's this? And then they go that direction. Because they don't really, yeah, they're not like really got real huge futuristic plans. This direction seems cool, so you go ahead. Okay? So we see is that they'll speculate. So that's why it's called mental speculation, not intellectual speculation. Because you're using the intelligence to analyze what's there, but you're not, but it's based on the interest of the mind. So if your interest is knowledge, you'll speculate there. If your interest is sense gratification, you'll speculate there. You know, and then what kind of knowledge you'll speculate there, and what kind of you'll speculate. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you have math. You like to speculate in math. So, speculating in math, you could get physics, you could get chemistry, you could get music theory. Right? You could get architecture, engineering, you could get all so many different areas. You know, for someone who likes math. So that's the whole thing, is all these different speculations areas can come up because you enjoy that. So what the mind enjoys is what you do. Check out the Vedanta Sutra. Right? So then, but someone else, it's karma. Right? And so you have all the senses, so which senses that they're focusing on, which combination, and then which context that's in. You know what I'm saying? Somebody likes to go for a walk out in a park. Someone likes to walk down the regular, you know, streets. Someone likes to go for their walk on a treadmill. You understand? But the point is they're all going for the walk because they all have different flavors. If you go to a gym, there's one move. You just walk down the main streets, then there's another move. You go to a park and walk, there's a different move. So it's all according to what your mind appreciates. Is that what I'm saying? So the whole point is this speculation then is always going to be there. Okay. Does this make sense? So you understand what's happening here? Is that as long as I'm not an agent, I can do all this speculation because then my mind, my desire, that's authority. I may be pious enough to work within the Vedic context of authority, or even if not using the Vedic, I may even accept the modern authorities. Right? And I'll work within that context. Like within the political or economic or, you know, social or whatever it is. I'll accept that. But I'm accepting that. And then I'm comfortable to work there. And if there's a problem comes up, then I'll move to somewhere else. These things are not really... They will not eat you alive. They won't do anything. I don't even think they're poisonous. They just don't taste good. That's why no birds or anybody else eats them. Frogs, nobody eats them. I saw once a frog catch one of those and then spit it out. Like that. You know. They do that thing with the tongue, you know, trying to get rid of the taste, you know.
Scarred for life.
Yeah, yeah. So then they won't bother them.
Some parts of Maharashtra say that on a Monday, you kill one of those, it's like offering a silver thing to Lord Shiva.
Oh. So they go out of the way to kill these.
Who says that?
The Marathis. They also put for, what is this? That the very famous Marathi, you know, with the Muslims, and he got killed, and, you know, the whole uprising.
Shivaji.
Yeah, Shivaji. Yeah, so for that culture that's produced Shivaji, then they come up with these. Someone else will come up with a different one. On Monday morning, you hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Vedanta Sutra being discussed in the assembly of pure Vaishnavas about Krishna, then, you know, that's, how you say, a very nice offer. We'll go with that one. Okay, now, when we say I'm the instrument, all this speculation is gone. So all the taste we get from speculation is all gone. So I'm the instrument. So then, now, you can use the process of speculation, but now it's not called speculation. Now it's called contemplation. That, I'm an instrument, so how to be the best instrument in the situation to apply myself to serving Krishna. So, the absorption is still just as full, but the flavor is different, because there's no false ego. I'm simply the instrument. Does that make sense? So that's why then for some, this concept that I'm the agent is as, you know, it's super bitter. They just don't want to hear it. Anything that reduces their speculation in the context that they know of karma and jnana, then has no taste. So that's why you see these jnanis and karmis. They will deal with the Shastra in as much as it gives rise to their ability to speculate and to enjoy in the way that the context that they are comfortable. But as soon as it goes beyond that, they're not interested. So that's why you may see people that are very, very pious. There's another one.
Where?
No, I'm just saying. It's like looking down there. It's over there. It's gone back and forth there a few times. Probably because it bumped into the wall and you can't figure out what's going on. That's what we're saying. The pramana chaitanya is not so great. Does that make sense? So, that's why then one of the first things is, I'm not this body, I'm the soul, and as the soul, I'm servant of Krishna. So just to say I'm not the body is not enough. Because even that, you can come up with all kinds of funny things. But I'm not the body, I'm servant of Krishna. Then it means, okay, what activities are pleasing to Krishna? I take part in those. And how do I know? It's Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. I can't make them up. Otherwise, whatever point we go, you know, then we will speculate. So you try to reduce it down as narrow as possible, the opportunity for speculation, and then, you know, within that it's a little bit more controllable. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but it's still more controllable. Does that make sense? Yeah?
And can we say that except the Supreme Lord, everybody is an agent?
Except the Supreme Lord is everybody an agent. Yes, that's what Lord Chaitanya says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Krishna is the Supreme and everybody else is his servant. Mm-hmm. Right? But I think it was Ekale, Ishware,
Krishna
are subditya. Yeah, so that's the point. Only Krishna is the Ishvara, everybody else is servant. So even his expansions are his servants. So from Balaram on down, all the Vishnu Tattva, they all consider themselves servants. All the Shakti Tattva, they consider themselves servants. That's just their natural way of thinking. We're the only ones because we're so small that then we can think this way or that way. Okay. Right, so the jiva is the agent, since this gives meaning to the scriptures, right? So that then somehow brings everything into line. Right? Not that we're the ones creating that, it's just that our understanding comes into line. As soon as we're the soul, we're the servant of the Lord, then everything starts to balance. As long as we think we're the master, then there'll always be a problem. Nevertheless, the Shrutis also confirm that the jiva's ability as an agent arises from the Supreme Lord. So, to be an agent, in what capacity, in which area, that then is also by the grace of the Lord. You have an interest in an area, you follow the rules according to that area, then you can develop as an agent in that area. But if you don't approach the Lord in the appropriate way for that area, then we won't develop in that area. Just because we feel like it, it actually practically doesn't work. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that we feel like it, that's the drive for then following the rules. Right? That's the thing, is that we see in the modern context, political context, following the rules, that's the conservative. What you feel like, that's the liberal. And it's well known, if you look at it unbiased, it's well known and documented, especially now, that if you go too liberal, things stop actually functioning. Even liberals acknowledge this. Right? But at the same time, as you don't want to take up the conservative. So the point is that areas that you are inspired in, that's the area, therefore you follow the rules and apply yourself. So just following the rules, then you'll end up with a smarta. Just what you feel like, you end up with a sahajya. Area where you're inspired to follow the rules to please Krishna, then that's what's balanced. Now, whether you're following because that's what you have to do, or you're following because it's spontaneous, doesn't matter. You're still doing the things correctly. But it's not about the rule. That's why you see even sometimes the devotees in their transcendental position, then their ecstasy is so great, they don't follow the rule. But they've successfully expressed that attraction to Krishna. That's why it's perfect. But you see externally, it's not perfect. Can I elaborate?
On the last one. Externally, not perfect.
Remember, we're studying Vedanta Sutra. Okay, so, when Krishna played his flute, right, then the gopis, then they wanted to hurry and go to Krishna. So in their great enthusiasm, then they want to go meet Krishna, so they want to look their best, but that the impatience that they have, you know, so therefore the limited time that they allow themselves compared to the time that it takes to prepare themselves, right, then doesn't match. So then, you know, they'll put on, you know, one earring instead of two, or put eyeliner in one eye, or put their sari on the bottom, put the bottom cloth on the top. Does that make sense? So in this way, then they go, or some of them, you know, they're putting an ankle, well, they take their sari, tie it to their ankle, you know, and go out. So, like this. So then, because it's so, the principle is to meet Krishna, that's the real thing. And so to do that, then they do it as quickly as possible. So in that way, it's perfect. But as far as the secondary form that they use on dressing up for Krishna, that's not actually in form perfect. But since that form is only to please Krishna, Krishna is very pleased to see them in this state. So Yogamaya will have it that Krishna can see them like this. But when they start the rasa dance by Yogamaya's influence, then how they wanted to look, that's actually how they look in the rasa dance. So they actually do have two earrings. They do have, so all the things that they imagined that they were preparing for Krishna, it looks like that. But because they didn't give the time in the beginning, it doesn't look like that. You understand? So the secondary has value in its connection to the primary. So that's why even if it's not perfect, if it's nice, perfectly connected to the primary, it's perfect. It's still considered perfect. Right? So the overemphasis on the rules and how nicely things are performed only without understanding how that pleases Krishna and the devotees, that's the smart thing. They think the perfection of the rule is what makes it work. But it's actually, it's being done, and why we don't break the rule is because breaking that rule doesn't please Krishna. That's why we don't break the rule. And following this rule, it pleases Krishna, that's why we follow that rule. So that's why you see both those on Vaidhi and Rag, they both follow the rules because they please Krishna. But one does thinks it's the rule that's making it work, and the other is thinking it's pleasing Krishna that makes it work. Someone said?
So following the rules will make the jiva as an agent with a proper consciousness throughout. Can we say that?
Can we say that? That the jiva following the rules to please Krishna, then that is then he's a proper agent. Yes. Means even if he's not doing to please Krishna, if at least he follows Krishna's secondary rules, then he will be able to function within the secondary rules. You understand? And if he doesn't follow the rules, then he will be following the rules of not following the rules. You know, just like to give an example. You ever heard of hipsters? Yeah. So hipsters, they don't follow any social rules or any, what do you call it? They don't fit into the norm. They don't follow the establishment. You know, all these kind of things. They're totally free-thinking, individual, every living entities that do whatever they like, right? But anyone who has a little bit of knowledge can I always identify a hipster because they're always all exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
They all perfectly follow the rules of not following. So therefore, you can always tell that's a hipster. Right? Does that make sense? Like, you know, normal cut pants, that's the normal that everybody's wearing. But like skinny jeans, those, you know, the women may wear, but the men aren't wearing. So therefore, the hipsters, to do something that no one else does, they wear skinny jeans. The problem comes, all hipsters wear skinny jeans. Practically, right? So you can so it becomes a norm. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that even you do something because you're going to fit into the you don't want to use the human form, then you know, which basically has eight positions and combinations you can make, right? Then you have an option of 8,400,000 if you don't want to follow in that way. So even though it seems that they're completely different and independent, no, they're just, this one's acting like a dog. That one's also acting like a dog. You know, but this one's acting like a bull terrier and that one's acting like a pit bull. Right? Does that make sense? You know, and the fancy one over there is a Pekingese. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yeah? So that's all. So they still will fit into Krishna's rules. So it's a matter of how much within they have. So in other words, the one who follows the rules is actually the most independent. And the one who doesn't, they're the most controlled. So that's the mode of ignorance. You think the guy who doesn't follow the rules, he's free. Like I remember one devotee having a conversation with one karmi about smoking. So the karmi was saying, I'm independent, I'm free, I can smoke if I want. You have to follow the rules. You can't smoke, so my position is better. The devotee pointed out, no, I could smoke, but I choose not to smoke. So actually, I'm the independent one, because I'm following my that. You, even if you wanted to stop smoking, you wouldn't be able to stop smoking. So where's your independence? Does that make sense? Yeah. However, the jiva can't create a universe is established by the Shutakara in Vedanta Sutta 4, 17 and 18. Yagat vyapara varjam prakaranad asan ni hitat vat and pratyak shopadeshad iti chen na adhikartika mandalas yoktehe. It is explained that the liberated jiva cannot create universes because of Shruti statements indicating that it is the Lord who does the creation. The liberated jivas, in any case, have no powers to create the universe. Then how can the conditioned jiva be the creator? This is illogical, right? So, there it is. So, someone may say, okay, as a conditioned soul, I can't create the universe, but as a liberated soul, I could. But no, as a liberated soul, you can't. So if the liberated soul, you can't, that means as a conditioned soul, you're definitely not going to be doing that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.